Good evening.
Wow, there are like two of you here. We have been on a journey this year. And I can remember back at the beginning of the semester when I put a chair up here, and it was just exactly what Ben was talking about. He talked about Jesus being at the center of this room. He talked about us being on level ground. He talked about grace being received by Jesus. And that was an experience that I personally had in that dorm room when I talked about Jesus being that stool and how he just kind of, when I walked in that room, all was forgiven. Everything I'd ever done was forgiven. I just felt mercy and grace on my life. And I pray that that is an experience that you have had or that you will have, that Jesus will meet you in a place where he enters into your life, where you don't feel like you have got any guilt. You don't feel like you have anything that you can't tell him because you know he can take care of it. And we started our year off with that, kind of with that image. And we moved quickly into another series about just how are we, with Jesus in us, going to be the church? And how are we going to be Jesus to other people? We got to do the things Jesus did. He knew names. He loved people and encouraged them. He asked them hard questions. And so we went through that series. But we also talked very clearly at the beginning of that, you can't fake that. You can't just love somebody and have it permeate off of you. Remember, we talked about that. Unless you have been forgiven first. It is the forgiveness that you receive that gives you that permeating love that people are just like feeling it. They can't really explain it. Because Jesus is the center of us now. So Jesus is also, he's the center that drew us in. He's also the center of our mission. As we go out, he is in us. We're doing what he did, not faking it, but having him live through us. And then Phil talked about us being the church, maybe even outside of this campus. And mission trips are filling up like crazy, and we want to take Jesus in us wherever he may call us. And now we've entered into a new series, and this series, it's a series that college students, like whatever I say, and I kind of felt like last week, you know, I kind of felt like my words were kind of coming out a little bit harshly, or not harshly, but just awkwardly. And afterwards, you know, I had a bunch of people, oh my goodness, that was a great topic, because it's a topic you guys are tuned into, and that is the topic of your dream, your future, your plan. What is it going to look like down the line? And we're going to continue with that. We're going to look at the life of Joseph. And last week, what we did, just as a review, is we said, we kind of tackled this question of how do we marry the call that Jesus has on our life of being Jesus to people. We get that, but usually we compartmentalize that, and then it's like, okay, but now I actually got to get a major and get a job and find a wife and a husband. And those things don't usually, in our heads, merge together. And so what I am hoping to do in this series is kind of merge those things together. Because what we talked about last week is I think sometimes we think my dream that I have for my life, the specific of that, is usually so separated from what I hear in church that I almost feel like either I got to choose one or the other. And what we looked at last week is that really what God wants is he wants you to live a surrendered life to him. And when we live that surrendered life to him, we enter into a big tent, a big canopy of God's will. And everyone's like, what's God's will for my life? What's God's will for my life? I've been in campus ministry forever. That's the number one question. What's God's will for my life? Hey, God's will for your life is to be under the tent. And there is opportunity for you to be a grace giver and to be a Jesus person in all different venues. And if specifically he has called you to be a teacher or a fireman or a dentist, it doesn't really matter. He's called you to some specific avenue, and within that you still have the opportunity to be Jesus to people, to have the grace that you receive from Jesus permeate out of you. And so we talked about that big umbrella that we're under and that there is opportunity within that. We said if you do get a specific call on your life like Joseph did, share it. You might get thrown into a well, but share it. Share it out loud. What is specifically God calling you to? Talk about it. And then last week we said, hey, push on some doors. Because right now, you might think, hey, I am headed in this major, in this, and when I graduate, I'm going to get this job, and I'm going to be in that corner of the tent. And God might be saying, hey, you just push on doors, and you're going to end up meeting somebody that gets you an internship, that ends up introducing you to someone else, and now you're in Chicago, and boom, I'm over in this corner. I never dreamt that. We talked, too, about how most people my age, 40 years old, if you ask them how they got there, they say, well, man, if I was 20 years old, I would have told you I never would be where I'm at now. God does. He works in that kind of a way all of the time. But it all can be under this canopy or this tent of God's will. And so that's kind of where we left off last week. Tonight, it might be a little bit heavier. We're going to talk about how this is a daily choice for you to take up your cross and to surrender and to follow him, as 1 Peter says. Like, what brings you in this tent is surrender to Jesus. And are there options in here? Oh, yeah, there's lots of options. Lots of things that you can do. But there are some things that will bring you out of the tent. There are some choices that you will make that will take you out of this dream of the Lord's, the big dream. And then all you've got is your specific dream. And your specific dream, outside of God's dream, is a dead-end dream. And it might look good to the outside world, but to you it's not going to be satisfying. It's not going to be fulfilling, and it's not going to accomplish what really you were built and you were made to accomplish. And so what is it? What are those things that are going to take you outside of this tent? What are the things that are going to take you outside? Well, I'll tell you this. There are two parts of your brain. I learned this a couple weeks ago, so I'm going to act smart. I'm not really smart. I just heard this. They have what they call the frontal lobe, and we have the hind brain. I don't know what's not called, like the back lobe. I don't know. So the hind brain is the back, and the frontal lobe, okay? And there's a big difference between what those sides of your brain do. The back part, the hindbrain, what this does is it's kind of more your primal nature. I hungry, I eat. But it's also connected very much to sexual gratification. I want. And we end up, don't we, all make decisions that are using mostly that part of our brain. The frontal lobe, now that's where we actually have reason and thought and we think things through. And whenever people are like, what were they thinking? Hey, they weren't thinking. They were using their hindbrain. God put it back there because, you know. Yeah, I don't know why. And they weren't thinking. They were reacting. They were being primal. And nobody wakes up and logically thinks through plans in which will take them out of the tent. I got an idea today. I'm going to do something that's going to bring me right out of the will of God and outside of this whole tent, and I'm not going to be a part of God's big dream. That's my plan. I think I can carry it out. Nobody's doing that. What we are doing is we are reacting and we are making decisions, largely sexually, that end up taking us out of the tent. I've got a list a mile long. You know a list a mile long of people that really have affected the rest of their life and taken them out of the big dream and maybe even their specific dream because of urges that they couldn't control in the moment. Tonight, we're going to take a look really at how Joseph handled this. Joseph really found himself, I'm going to pick up from last week and tell a little of this story. We're going to save the PowerPoint for a little later. that Joseph was thrown into this well, and his brothers were all ticked off at him, and they thought that he was, I guess, a little bit arrogant for having a dream that said that he was going to dominate them and they were going to kneel down to him someday. And so they got ticked off. They threw him in a well, and they said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to sell him off, tell Dad that he's dead, and he'll be out of our life forever. They carried out the plan. Joseph ended up being taken to Egypt, and he was sold into slavery to this one leader's home named Potiphar. And while that's going on, one of Joseph's brothers is falling into a very primal situation with his daughter-in-law. It's an ugly chapter. Chapter 38, it's kind of weird. It just is like thrown in the middle of this Joseph story. This whole thing is about Joseph. And you start with Joseph's dream, and then he's sold into slavery. And then it's just like stops, and it's like Judah and Tamar. Judah was the brother of Joseph. And they just lock in on this story in chapter 38, and then it picks up in chapter 39 with Joseph again. And so I'm going to summarize this little story of what happened to Judah. Judah had a daughter-in-law, his son's wife. His son dies. And a number of things happen. I won't get into all the detail, but what he does is he goes down to the temple. She is sitting outside the temple with a veil over her face. He thinks she's a prostitute. He makes a move and says, how about it? She says, how about a payment? He says, done deal. She says, I don't trust you. I need some collateral. So he gives her some collateral. He gives her couple things. I can't remember what they were exactly. But he gives her some collateral, some of his personal items. They have sex. He leaves, and he finds out later that his daughter-in-law was acting as a prostitute, and now she's pregnant. And he says, oh, the gall of her. Doesn't know it's her. Doesn't know who he slept with. And he says, burn her at the stake. And they bring her forward, and she pulls out his personal items, and she says, do these look familiar? And then he recants. She gives birth to twins. End of the story. Seemingly like he gets off, like she doesn't die and he doesn't really have any ramifications. It really doesn't show. I mean, there might have been some circumstantial things that have happened in that situation, but it kind of seems like he gets off scot-free. Kind of seems like he doesn't really have a big consequence to this whole issue that went on. But we know better because we know that story all too well. It's a disgusting story, but it's a story that we know. I mean, it might not be exactly like that, but we all have those stories in our families. We know this story. We are well aware of this story. And we're well aware of just how awkward family reunions are after this. And we are well aware of what alimony looks like and how these kids are probably going to be raised and how they're going to be introduced to dad. We're well aware of that story. And unfortunately, we're really aware of just how the ugliness of our reactive, primary, primal instincts cause long-term effects. Judah made a decision that took him out of the tent and really affected other people as well. Sex does not just affect you. It affects other people as well. And then, boom, we jump into chapter 39. And it's really as if the intention here was to contrast these two stories. Let's take a look at the story. Chapter 39. Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. An Egyptian named Potiphar had brought him from the Ishmaelite, Ishmaelite traders who had taken him there. Potiphar was one of Pharaoh's officials, and he was the captain of the palace guard. And the Lord was with Joseph. He gave him great success. Joseph lived in Potiphar's house. Now, let's just stop for a second, and I want you guys to hone in on the fact that God was with Joseph. God gave him that dream. God started off by saying, hey, I've got a dream for you. You're going to rise to success. Your brothers are going to bow down to you. And at one point, he probably thought, oh my gosh, I'm in the bottom of a well. They're going to kill me. This is a permanent spot. I can't get out of it. And that might be where you've been. But God has stayed with you. God stays with Joseph. He is still in the tent, and he is rising Joseph up out of this place of slavery, this place of despair. And it says God is with him. And as he's with him, he's blessing him. You see that? Now let's listen to just how much blessing is coming to him by the grace of God, by him being under this tent. Joseph's master saw that the Lord was with him. See, it's even noticeable to everyone else. He saw that the Lord gave Joseph success in everything he did. So Potiphar was pleased with Joseph, and he made him his attendant. Next, he put Joseph in charge of his house, and he told Joseph to take good care of everything he owned. And from that time on, the Lord blessed Potiphar's family and servants because of Joseph. And he blessed everything that Potiphar had in his house and field. It's just carrying on and on and on. And so Potiphar told Joseph to take good care of everything he owned. With Joseph in charge, he didn't have to worry about anything except the food he ate. I mean, that's kind of cool. He found this like amazing person that could just be blessed by God. And he says, well, since you're blessed by God, take care of everything I own. Next, Joseph was strong and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife noticed Joseph, and she said to him, make love to me. But he said, no, my master has put me in charge. And he told her, now he doesn't have to worry about anything in the house. He trusts me to take care of everything he owns. No one in this house is as high a position as I am. My master hasn't held anything back from me except you. You are his wife. So how could I do anything evil like that? How could I sin against God? Let's keep it there for just a second. There's a couple things that really stand out to me about this particular section. The first is that he recognizes that nothing has been held back from him except her. Nothing. And I'll tell you what, that is the very... You would think that everything except something would be, oh great, I get to play with all this stuff and I don't really have to mess with this one thing. But that is one of the prerequisites, it seems, for our primal nature, for our hindbrain to kick in and to say, the one thing I can't have is the one thing I want. Right? That is the one thing I'm going to go after. It's the one thing I can't have, so it's the one thing I want. That sounds an awful lot like the garden, doesn't it? Hey, you can pick from any tree except this one. Primal nature. I want that one thing I can't have. I want the one thing I can't have. Do you notice what's happening here, though? Do you understand the difference between Judah and Joseph? Do you understand that he is engaging his frontal lobe? He is thinking this through. He is logically going through a list of all of the things that he is in charge of and all of the things that he would lose if he slept with her. I went through this a couple weeks ago. I hang out with a group of 10 guys. We do this discipleship community once a month. I just started last month, so I've only been to one. My next one's this Thursday. I can't wait. And our activity last month was this. Based upon this text, understand that Joseph engaged his brain, his logic, and he thought through all of the things that he would lose. And then they handed me a card, a 3x5 card, 10 guys. And he handed us that card, and the leader of this group said, I want you to fill up this card with everything that you would lose if you had an affair. That was a sobering activity. I had to write down all my kid names. You know what kind of reputation I would lose with my kids if I had an affair? I had to write down number of year names. I had to write down my job. I had to write down my wife. I had to write down so many things that I have so much privilege of being in this tent with Jesus, doing what he wants me to do, that I would lose because I would be probably taken in a lot of ways outside of the tent because I chose to not submit to the Lord in that area. And I got to thinking about that. Like, I have a lot to lose because I have a lot that I've already got. I got kids and a wife. You guys don't. But there's an awful lot still riding on your decisions. And just because you can't see it doesn't mean you're not losing it. And just because it showed in the chapter before this that it looked like Judah really didn't really have any consequences for his actions, there were consequences for his actions. And just because everybody on this campus that's sleeping around and has no thought of the consequences of it, and it just seems like it's not affecting them, it's going to affect them. It has consequences. And Joseph, I love at the bottom of this, he's talking to her, and he says, now how could I sin against, and you think he's going to say Potiphar, how could I sin against your husband? No, how could I sin against God? Joseph, very engaged with his frontal lobe, understanding he is in the tent, understanding he is in this position where he is blessed by God. Everything that's being blessed is because of God, because he's in the tent, because he's obeying God. He's surrendered to God. And he knows that if he takes the one thing that he shouldn't have, that is going to be gone. How could I sin against God? Next. So, she spoke to Joseph day after day. This wasn't a one-time deal. This is a constant temptation. You know what I'm talking about. But he told her that he wouldn't make love to her, and he didn't even want to be with her. And one day, Joseph went into the house to take care of his duties, and none of the family servants was inside. Potiphar's wife grabbed him by his coat. Make love to me, she said. But he left his coat in her hand, and he ran out of the house. Next. And she saw that he had left his coat in her hand and had run out of the house, and so she called her servant. Look, this Hebrew slave has been brought here to make fun of us, and he came in here to force me to have sex with him, but I screamed for help, and he heard my scream, so he left his coat beside me, and he ran out of the house. Complete lie. And she kept Joseph's coat with her until Potiphar came home, and then she told him her story, and she said, that Hebrew slave you brought to us, he came to me to rape me, but I screamed for help, and so he left his coat beside me and ran out of the house. Ugh, sick. Next. Potiphar's wife told him, that's how your slave treated me. And when Joseph's master heard her story, he became very angry, and so he put Joseph in prison. It was the place where the king's prisoners were kept. And while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was still with him and was kind to him. Joseph, at first glance, reading Judah's story, the chapter before, and then reading this story, at first glance, it's like, oh my goodness, how does it pay off? How does it pay off to do the right thing? He gets thrown in prison unjustly. Judah just gets off. You guys live in a very different world than most of the rest of this town. It is acceptable in this square mile to have sex with whoever you want and really not feel like there's a lot of consequences to it. Oh, but once you get that ring on your finger, everything's different, and so that it gets a little bit messier. Hey, it's messy now. You just don't know it. And it just doesn't look like there's an awful lot of consequences that go on with you're living in chapter 38. But my question tonight, it's pretty simple. Would you rather take yourself out of the tent, even if it doesn't seem like there's much consequence? Or would you take the suffering that might come from doing the right thing? I doubt you're going to get thrown in prison for not having sex. Pretty sure that's not going to happen. But even if it was that extreme, how much do you value being in the tent? How much do you value being with the Lord, doing His work on His terms, in His room? It's going to come down to some pretty concrete decisions you're going to have to make probably in this area. No question. And tonight, I just don't want us to forget. I just don't want us to forget what started this whole thing. Who's the source of this whole thing? Who was at the stool, the center of that room when you first met Jesus, where you just received forgiveness for whatever you've done? You remember that? And then do you remember that feeling of what it was like to be used by God, to be Jesus to someone else, and to love them unconditionally the same way you received it? And then you're on this mission, and it's like, oh my goodness, I just want to share this with people. And it's not enough to do it here. I've got to go on a May mission trip or a winter mission trip. I got to share it. And you've been living this, and you're in this tent, and you have these temptations in the moment to make a rash decision, a carnal decision, a quick decision, a primal decision that just has long consequences to it. And a lot of you are sitting here saying, Pete, too late. I already did it. I'm already out of there. It's like, hey, you know what? Here's the beauty of Jesus. The beauty of Jesus. Take up your cross daily. There's always room to surrender and come back in a surrendered heart to be used by Jesus. But Pete, you don't understand. I've messed up more than 3 times, more than 6 times. I've been messing up. Hey, I understand. There is grace that's renewed every day. Day for you. And tonight might be that chance to just come under this and to say, you know what, I'm coming in for good. We got an example of that last week when Emily said, I'm going to just surrender. I'm going to get baptized. I'm going to show the world that I'm dying to myself. I'm going to live in the tent. This is where I want to be. And some of you need to be doing that. I've been talking to some of you. I know some of you are like wrestling around like, yeah, I need to surrender. Why? Why am I messing around? Why am I on the fringe and sometimes I don't know if I'm in or I'm out? Just die to myself and come in. That's where some of you are at. And some of you have been baptized and you know where you're at, but you've also know that you have been making some decisions. And this might even be decisions that aren't necessarily dealing with other people. They just might be decisions that are very primal, carnal, internet kind of stuff. And you say, you know what? Tonight's a fresh start. Tonight's a new beginning. Tonight's an opportunity for me to take a deep breath and not feel all weird anymore and not feel like that nasty stuff in my stomach, that pit in my gut that's like, am I doing right? Am I doing wrong? And you're just kind of feeling that awkwardness and just want to like be at peace with Jesus. And you want to restart this thing. Tonight, We don't always do this, but I think it's very appropriate tonight that we would take communion together. And really what we're doing here is we are remembering that sacrifice that Jesus made for us. There's the broken body, and there's the blood represented in the bread and the juice. We take that in a way that's just like, I'm ingesting these emblems into me to say, Jesus, I just want you to know I'm all yours. I need a reminder of that tonight. Doesn't that sound like a good thing to do? I feel like I need to do that. Tonight's a great chance for us to do that together. We practice open communion. So I know there's a lot of different backgrounds here, and if your background and your church background doesn't allow you to take communion with us, hey, that's okay. There's no pressure. You can just sit and pray where you're at. If you know that you're not a surrendered person to Christ yet in a full way, where you haven't really been baptized, you just don't know that you're really his yet, hey, pray tonight. Sit and let Jesus just kind of reside over you. But if you are a believer, we welcome you to just come up and you can take communion at your leisure, really, throughout our worship at the end. What we're going to do is it's going to be just kind of messy, but we're just going to worship under this tent and just let Jesus know, hey, you're all mine, and at your leisure, if you want to come take communion, that is an option for you. And you can just... We can just take it there, and we have some garbage disposals, we've got some trash bins next to the tables. So let's all stand. God, thanks for sending Jesus. For making this simple. It does kind of take some forethought, and it does kind of take some decision and some front brain activity, I think, to let you know that we want to surrender to you. And so, Father, we're asking for some courage tonight, maybe, to let you really come in a way that maybe you haven't come in before, to let you reside within this place, to let us be free from the things that really have kept us from being completely free inside your will. Thank you for the gift of communion that we get to partake in, and we get to remind ourselves of just what an awesome gift you gave us and how you're the source of it. And it's in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen.